And it's a way also to engage, you know, to this, to let the Spirit talk to us and pay attention. Go deeply inside and see where is God is inviting us to be in order to know where God is inviting us to go.
Patrick Saint-Jean is a Jesuit regent. A native of Haiti, he has degrees from universities in France and Mexico, a postdoc from the University of Chicago, and he completed his theological studies at Catholic Theological Union in Chicago. Currently teaching psychology at Creighton University, he's also the author of a remarkable new book titled The Spiritual Work of Racial Justice, A Month of Meditations with Ignatius of Loyola. The book, which we discuss today, explores anti-racism as a spiritual journey, a transformation of personal attitudes that will lead to better social policies and more opportunities for flourishing for all of God's children. I'm Matthew Wickman, founding director of the BYU Humanities Center. Patrick Saint-Jean, it is such a pleasure to see you today through Zoom and to hear you on the podcast. Thank you so much for taking the time to meet with me today.
Thank you very, very much, Matt. This is more than blessings for me today to be with you and to speak and to work with you. I really see these conversations and somehow as a spiritual pilgrimage, if you will, just a way we can come here to be together, just pray, sit down, reflect, and see where is that God is calling us and what he's telling us and how he's inviting us to meet each other where we are and pay attention to see where he's leading us.
That is really crucial. And I come from a spiritual tradition myself, you know, a member of the Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints that really believes in that kind of thing you just said there, Patrick. So I look forward to that very much. Thank you. We'll get to your book here in a minute, which is such a remarkable book. Maybe I could begin by asking you a couple sort of background questions. You know, I often begin this podcast by asking people how faith impacts their life and work. And this is especially relevant in your case because you are a Jesuit regent as well as a teacher of psychology. Now, this is so fascinating. How do these two aspects of your life inform each other?
I would say that I'm this poor, humble man who has been having the grace, really opportunity to be here, number one. Happened to be a Jesuit, happened to be a professor here at Creighton University. But before everything, I've been seeing myself as all of us, a simple child of God. It's been called to see, find God everywhere. And as you mentioned earlier, how we like that inform my faith, I would say pretty much is everything that's around me, everything that I see, I touch, and somehow is an encounter with the divine. My faith, in fact, is what lead me to do everything I do in who I am and who I pay attention to listen to who God wants me to become. It's what I get from my family. It's what I get also from the daily life, and it's what the Jesuits are giving me today.
Has it always been that way for you, or did you kind of find God at a certain stage of your life?
This is a very great question, Matt. I really like it. I think I'm going to have to tell all of the secret today, right? I was born my mom, she's a Baptist preacher.
Okay.
And I was born in a Baptist family. In fact, my parents, my ancestors arrived here in Pensacola, Florida in 1719. And they make the journey from Pensacola to Louisiana. It's where they got baptized in Louisiana in 1720. Then I got baptized into Catholicism. Then my ancestors was bought by another slave owner up to New Jersey and eaten down by 1743. That's where my great-grandfather learned to read and write and everything over there. Then this owner happened to be a Baptist. Now, from Catholic, my parents right now became Baptist because the owner were Baptist. Ever since, that's how. In 1876, this owner used to go in and travel in the Caribbean for medical missions. That's how my parents end up in Haiti.
Okay.
And you can imagine right now, after 100 years, what happened, right? About 100 years, I was born. I was born into the Southern Baptist. In fact, my parents were the very, very first family to board the Southern Baptist in Haiti. Faith has always been the guide post that lead me. Faith has always been the breath that I take, what wake me up in bed in the morning, and what motivate me, and what bring me back to bed at night. It's just really like from this family of faith.
What a fascinating journey, Patrick, of your families. And you yourself actually have also just personally had a really amazing life journey. So you mentioned you were born in Haiti. You have degrees from universities in France and Mexico. You completed a postdoc at the University of Chicago and then did your theological studies in Chicago at the Catholic Theological Union. So you really have this international educational background. I'm curious about this. You say you see God in all things. When you were a student in France, did you ever expect you'd be called in, led by God, to be studying in Mexico or the United States? Or did all this transpire unexpectedly?
This is a very great question, Smart. To be honest with you, I think this deep sense of like spiritual openness really allow me to remain open, but at the same time, I know what's coming tomorrow, yet I'm open and grateful for whatever God will give me. I think that's how things really happen. Even though I was in a program that I could have like suspected that would have asked me to go those places, but to be honest with you, I was not expected that. I end up moving to the DRC for 1 year for graduate school, then go back and went to Florence, Italy, go back and then Brazil, and go back and then Mexico, and then also Colombia and Spain.
Wow.
Go back. And I don't know. I think it's this call God really gave me to remain open to the Spirit. And so far, God knows what he's doing. He hasn't been deceived me yet. All of this.
That's wonderful. I have a real conviction, you know, that if we're open to the Spirit, that we can encounter and discover things we never would, just left to our own intuition. And if we trust God, I believe what you say entirely, Patrick. We are led to fascinating places and things, and we are open to not just to God, but to the world in ways we never could imagine otherwise or experience otherwise. Maybe we can turn to this. Speaking of being open to the Spirit, you've written a really wonderful book called The Spiritual Work of Racial Justice, and subtitled A Month of Meditations with Ignatius of Loyola. And you engage the famous Ignatian spiritual exercises as a tool here for combating racism. And I found this to be such a compelling way to imagine the spiritual exercises and a compelling way to imagine combating racism. So I wonder if we could begin that discussion of the book with you explaining to our listeners who might not be familiar with the spiritual exercises, what they are.
Oh, thank you very, very much, Matt. Really appreciate that. This book really come alive, and especially this year when we are celebrating the 500 years of anniversary of Ignatius of Loyola conversions, when he was converted. And pretty much the spiritual exercises is a set of prayer reflections of Ignatius himself while he was in convalescence after he received his bullet from the French while he was in Pamplona. His chief said, the general of the army said, no, don't go. He said, okay, I want to go because I can do it. He did not pay attention. He did not listen. He effectively go. And there we go. The French was coming on May 21st and 1521. That's how he received the bullet. And there we go. Ignatius lay down. And the French took him to bring him back home. Ignatius said, the French men treat me with gentleness and kindness. That was God's hands. Mm. This is here where the whole process of conversion began. The spiritual exercises, it's just like the Ignatius journal himself, how about like 10 months while he was in the process of healing, go down in Manresa, sit down and pray, and in everything he received, everything that he was experiencing himself as the person he has been written down. And that's how we had what we call today, 500 years after, is the spiritual exercises. The spiritual exercises is not just for the Jesuit. It's not just or not just for Catholic. This is a gift that Ignatius has given to the church. You don't have to be Catholic to go through the spiritual exercises.
Yeah.
And in fact, very, very early on, Ignatius was very, very clear about that. And it's a way also to engage, you know, to this, to let the Spirit talk to us and pay attention, go deeply inside and see where is God is inviting us to be in order to know where God is inviting us to go.
Nice. Yeah. I like that description a lot about these exercises. I find them amazing. They're not, again, you know, Ignatius is the founder of the Jesuits, you know, 16th century, experiences you're talking about, 1521, the 500 year anniversary. And I myself was not raised practicing the spiritual exercises, but I think that they are extraordinary. I've learned a lot about them the last few years, and the practices they describe are wonderful. And just as you say, they invite us to sort of contemplate, you know, where God is in our lives at present. And so it's to direct our give us some direction for where we're going, right? Which is such a crucial thing.
Invite us to go deeper within ourselves, you know?
Right, yes.
And this is really like use the exercises as an invitation to go in.
Yes.
But you don't stay in, right?
Yeah,
but
right.
You as the launch pad to see where is like God want to go. But first, get to go here. First of all, get to go here. It's very, very clear. And in fact, you know, as many people always say, to say, you cannot give what you don't know. That's, I think, what Ignatius really invite us. If you really, really want to go out there, first go and eat within.
That's great. I love that. Right. Go in first in order to be able to go out. Go more deeply within oneself so that one can extend oneself to others and go places one could not otherwise. I think that's very well said, Patrick. Thank you. Are you yourself a longtime practitioner of the spiritual exercises? I'm curious how it occurred to you to think about them in relation to racial justice, which is such a, I think it's an ingenious connection. It really is an inspired connection, I think. Did this come from long practice of yours, or did this come to you when you'd been practicing for not that long a time?
No, I think really, again, as a convert, I began practicing the exercises since I was 16. Right, I mean, in high school, I pretty much graduated from high school at 16 and moving to college. That's, they have been somehow my companion for the journey. And engaging this deep, as I said on the very, very beginning of this podcast, I always see that as a spiritual pilgrimage where one being called to slowly walking with God, be aware and pay attention, and often see where God is inviting me today. That's what I've been receiving ever since.
Thank you. Let me ask you about the structure of the book. You know, as with Ignatius's exercises, the ones that you create in your book are set over 4 weeks, 7 days per week, and they kind of take us on a journey. You take us on a journey through here, Patrick, from confronting the sin of social and racial division in week one. We move in week two to reflecting on Christ as a person of color. Then in week three, to considering the crucifixion relative to the suffering of people of color. And we culminate in week four with a series of meditations, or perhaps a better word is contemplations, on resurrection and the power of possibility in lifting us past racial injustices. These 4 weeks, right? Were there other topics you considered for the weeks? Did you have to make any difficult choice? Did you have like 10 that were possible and you had to choose four? Or were these four just obvious to you that these were the ones that you needed for the book?
I think I should maybe let me begin from down to up. This is actually okay. Number one. This is not a book to read.
Good. Yeah.
This is a work to do.
Yes.
A spiritual work. The way it's been structured really within 30 days also is the image that I took from the spiritual exercises themselves. All Jesuits in the world, including Pope Francis, they have to do at least twice during the whole formations, a 30 days silent retreat, where, as you just described it, Matt, we go through all of this moment, working with Christ and do everything. This is, and somehow I invite people to just engage and just work with the Jesuit with us. In fact, this book is a retreat. It's not just a book.
It's a
retreat.
Point.
I invite people to engage with, see ourselves, means where have we been and how we got here? And then why is God in the midst of all of this, man? We have tried everything. But when was the last time we have taken time to invite God in these conversations?
That's such a great question. You know, that's such a great question, Patrick. I know that, you know, in our current social moment, we hear so much, as we should, I mean, justifiably so, about race and racial conflict and racial justice and policies. But the question that you're really putting here, the question about where is God in the middle of this for all of us, not just those who feel the effects of injustice, but where is God in the lives of those who perpetrate it, even if unwittingly, you know, unconsciously, unintentionally, you know, and this is, as you point out, in fact, you say, I like how you say it in your introduction. You say, I'll quote you here, "The spiritual exercises are not structured like a story. They are much more like reading a car manual.
Yes.
They're a how-to set of directions for drawing close to God so that we can be freed to see our lives differently and make a difference in the world around us." Seems to me like that approach, Patrick, makes a difference in our conversations around racial justice, your approach.
Yes, yes. And then the very beginning of the exercises, it's what Ignatius himself invited us to engage with, is the principle and foundations. It is where you can see how I intertwine my personal life from my humble family or the family of faith, who teach me there can be no love without justice. If today we want to talk about love, we first have to sit down, pay attention deeply within. How did I really pay attention to my actions? And what is my action inform? How is my action inform the way that I say I love you? We have to act for just the first, then our action in themselves can be an action of love, if the action that guides us to justice. This is really where I work through. That's why the principle and foundation is very, very clear. Ignatius is inviting us to think about our creations. You know, God's created all to, by all means, to save us. The creation in itself, we are all being created by God. But okay, then how is like myself as a creature of the Creator can engage in this action to the creations? That will be an action of justice for the love of the creations. That is where we get in these conversations.
Okay, which I think is great. I'll tell you, though, what you said about there really can be no love if there is no justice, that's such a profound thought, and it's also a really tough thought, because it means that if I see myself, you know, as a loving person, I care about the planet, I care about other people, I, you know, care about my family, my society, and yet I live in a society where there is injustice, my love is somehow incomplete, you know, as long as there is not justice for all of God's creatures.
Yes. They literally, the way the principle and foundation, in fact, has been said by Ignatius, we're all created to praise and love of God, by all means to save our souls. But toward this deep sense of love, just love, act toward justice. The question being here again, you know, in the very, very, very beginning, how do I see myself for you? You as my brother, as my sister, who do I act to be for you? When I see you, how do I define myself? Who do I identify you for me? Without any blind, any discriminations, can I really, really say that you are my loving brother, my loving sister? And then how is my behavior can just express that without saying? This is where like the big questions mark came here. You know, this bring us back again, you know, sometime we are all challenging on this, you know, what I call in my work is this spiritual dissonance.
Spiritual dissonance, yes.
This is what I call in my work with the spiritual dissonance, how we just like challenge with this like idea here. I don't know, Matt.
You know, it's such a great, what you're bringing here to the topic of racial justice is this question of love and really of spiritual connectedness to God. And we can't really have true connectedness to God or love of each other where there is still injustice. This is such an important, I think, element to our conversation around race, Patrick. And I think it's something that your book gets at so wonderfully. Please say more.
No, the moment right now, you just, it's very, very easy. Again, the second aspect I bring again is in the book also, and some other work I do. That's also what I call like, you know, this love gap.
Yeah.
Love gap, and somehow it's become as a disorder that all of us were suffering with. No matter what we do, oh, no, I love you, and that's it. But it's your actions is expressing this type of love. Otherwise, you fell in this love gap here.
That's right.
It's deeply within our own faith that we are practicing, in fact.
That is an observation which I believe, Patrick, to be deeply true, and it's also one that really compels anyone, certainly me included, to deep reflection. Like, you know, where are these love gaps in my own life, in my own spiritual life, in my own practice as a, not just as a religious person, but my own practice in society, you know, where I want to imagine myself as a person who stands up for justice, imagine myself as a person who's fair, a person who loves others. But, you know, it seems like love gaps would be produced almost instinctively by us, that we wouldn't, unless we're really vigilant and mindful, they can creep into our practice, creep into our habits.
If this love is not really informed by the work of justice, it's going to be again here again and again and again.
That's right.
And this is where the spiritual aspect to it comes from, because we know that we are all like fragile, we are all broken human. I cannot decide to engage on it directly by myself. God had to come here.
Yeah.
The spiritual work, because the line is very, very thin between both of them. It's very, very thin. This is where we need to sit down, spiritually discern where is God in the midst of all of this, and what is God is asking of me, and where he's leading me.
Okay, this is great hearing you expound on this, Patrick. You know, this book you've written is so rich. And we only have time to go through a portion of it, because as you point out, it really is a book meant to be sat with and used for journaling, you know, and used, you know, for prayer and used for a number of things. But I do want to give our listeners a sampling of what's in the book. And so what I'd like to do is run through a passage or two from each of the 4 weeks, ask you about them, you know, and have you comment. Is that okay?
Perfect. Wonderful.
Okay. So week one is titled The Sin of Division. And one of the really important points you make in this first section concerns the reality and impact and also the elusiveness of structural racism, right? It's structural racism is all around us. Many whites don't see it. And in fact, as you point out, I'm going to quote you here, surveys conducted by the Public Religion Research Institute found that white Christians, including evangelical Protestants, mainline Protestants, and Catholics, are almost twice as likely as whites without a religious affiliation to say police violence against blacks are isolated incidents rather than evidence of a pattern. So that, you know, white Christians don't see patterns of structural racism as easily as those who are not Christian at all. And my question for you is, why do you think it's so especially difficult for white Christians to wrap their minds around structural racism or to learn to see it?
This is such a very, very great question, Matt. Thank you very, very much. But, you know, I don't know if you've been like following really like even the structure in the physical, like churches, as building institutions, how we decided to build our churches, where we put them, and who actually are our members, and who can contribute. You know, internally, like even our behavior is already expressing all this deeply aspect, the questions that we are talking about here. And I really, really like the name of your podcast, Faith Imaginations.
Thank you.
And because this is also one of the part of my work also, what I come to understand here, we as Christians in America, we are deeply suffering of a spiritual crisis of imaginations. We struggle a lot to imagine a Christ, a God that we are praying to, who is not just white, just like us. And that's the roots of the whole problem. And that's what led us here in this podcast. And that has been around here for more than 500 years. We struggle to imagine a God who is not like us. Mm. Mm. It's not like me. If it okay, it would be good. But if this God is like me, the same skin color like me, then if you're not the same skin color like me, internally, even objectively, it's very clear you are not from this God. Therefore, I don't have any spiritual obligations to stand up with you and for you. That's the root of the whole problem. It's a crisis of a spiritual imaginations to see Christ and others who are not the same skin color like me.
That's so great, Patrick. That's so insightful of you. And yeah, and there's certainly a tendency, I think, for people generally to want to imagine God in their own image rather than humans and created in God's image. We create a God in our own. And just an exercise to imagine a God who is not like us, who's racially different from us, is such an important act of spiritual deepening through superficial estrangement, right?
Yes. We have made an idol of God.
Yeah.
That's what we have made it here.
We lacking imagination, we create idols. That is already a great takeaway for this podcast, Patrick.
No, that's where God's within Ignatius invited us here to struggle with, because this crisis of spiritual imagination, that's where he meets us. Remember, we talked about like this love gap early on. The love gap is a defense mechanisms that we use due to this lack, you know, due to this crisis of spiritual imagination. Then we make God become an idol of our own perceptions, our own vision, our own shapes and wave. And here we are today.
And here we are. Yeah. On that subject, something else you mentioned in that first week, I want to ask you about. You know, you talk about disordered affections. It's like a version of this love gap idea, right? And these disordered affections are wrong attitudes and perspectives about racism that you say separate us from one another as much as they separate us from the divine. And I'm wondering if you would, again, elaborate on this point. I mean, say I'm somebody, so I'm white, right? Say I'm someone who never perpetuates any racist idea or attitude or language. You know, I live a life of what I think is a life of justice, I think. But I also don't think about race as often, as intentionally, you know, as I might. How might someone like me fall into a state of disordered affection?
Matt, I think the conversation here, we are invited to engage in God's creations. It's not because I can say, okay, you know what, I was not directly involved in this. I'm good, okay, kumbaya, see you next door. Are you able and willing to understand that there is an issue here? Those who are like suffering of the injustice, do you believe that they are also part of the God's creations? Okay. If you're not, good for you. Well, if you believe that they are part of God's creation and there is a problem here, then you receive these invitations to engage here. This disorder affection, and somehow it's internally this language that I don't put that clearly on the book, but there is what I'm calling here against. It's sort of like this spiritual denial that we all like, again, we're suffering. We deny of the existence of God and others because others just not looking like us. Again, we're so attached to what I call, whether or not it's a gift of your skin color. This disorder affection is like how we're so attached to our whiteness, and that's leading us away from the gift that God has given us in the creation.
It's a great point, Patrick. And I think, you know, someone like me, for example, I'm talking about myself here, but I could be talking about a lot of people, you know, we get so bogged down with our own life problems, our responsibilities, you know, things that we feel are a little plots of life to tend, you know, and cultivate as best we can. And it's so easy to get distracted from larger issues of injustice or just the glory of God's diversity of creation. I mean, our thoughts get too narrow, our prayers grow too narrow. This is where, as you say, if I can go back to something you said earlier, where we start lacking the imagination to ask bigger questions of God and to ask deeper questions of ourselves and how we relate to the world. And it can be a matter of simple obliviousness, you know, simple forgetting to look beyond what's narrowly around us. And there's a tendency to want to look just narrowly because when we look out into the world, there's so much stress and strife and trouble, and it causes so much anxiety. People who say, well, I don't want to watch the news. Well, okay, I get not wanting to watch the news. That can be depressing. And yet when you turn yourself off of what's outside of yourself, that's when you run the risk of falling into this, not just a love gap, but really I'll use the word imagination gap or spiritual denial, as you just said. That's where I think a lot of this is born. It's just I can't handle what's way outside of my experience. So I'll focus on my experience, and my experience is so narrow that there I forget to look at both the glory of God's diverse creation and the problems of injustice.
Mm-hmm. I agree with you. I mean, again, you know, I sometimes myself, I come back from work, so many things happening in the news. He really make me upset. I sometimes want to turn off the TV. But the questions that I'm asking myself, can I choose to deny what is in the God's creations and inform how this, what is happening right now, can inform me and help me to be better, a better servant, a better steward of the kingdom? Or do I just want to deny it and turn off and then just go on back on my small privileged cocoon and okay, that's it? We have the options here. You need to make the choice. Do I want to make my privilege become an idol that isolated me from the rest of the creations? Or do I want to challenge with my privilege to engage also on what's happening in the creations?
Thank you for listening to the first part of Patrick St. John's two-part episode. Please join us next time as Matt and Patrick talk more about spiritual exercises, the complex reality of racism, the real work of pursuing racial justice, and Patrick's reflections on the social power of a deeply committed religious life.
Thank you for listening to this episode of the Faith and Imagination podcast. This podcast is sponsored by the BYU Humanities Center and the College of Humanities at Brigham Young University, and is produced and edited by Abby Thatcher and Bobby May. The music for this podcast is composed by Ethan Wickman and is performed by Nicholas Phillips on Albany Records. If you enjoyed this episode, please leave us a review on your podcast platform. And if you're interested in other episodes or would like to know more about the BYU Humanities Center, check out our website at humanitiescenter.byu.edu. Thanks again for listening.